And our connection for this hour was made in 1944 at the Battle of the Bulge. American troops were heavily outnumbered as they waged what was one of the bloodiest battles in the history of the U.S. Army. The temperature was 10 degrees below zero for a time as Americans held their ground. As one veteran describes it, quote, "The trees are splintering and crashing down around you, and there's not a damn thing you can do about it but hug the ground and pray. It can become awfully vicious to have your friends blow up right alongside of you," end quote. That veteran is lifelong Rochester resident Jack Foy, who served as an infantry machine gunner in General George Patton's Third Army. More than seven decades later, his memories of the battlefield are vivid and emotional. So are those of Corporal John Woods, who served in the Army Air Corps in World War II. They are two of just a few surviving World War II veterans in our area, sharing their stories. Yesterday, of course, Memorial Day, veterans like Foy and Woods remembered friends lost in the war, those who made the ultimate sacrifice. And 75 years after VE Day, communities honor surviving World War II veterans whose voices become fewer as time moves on and, as Foy says, nature takes its course. This hour, he and Corporal Woods are joining us to share their stories, their experiences in the war, as their experiences as veterans, and they discuss what they want all Americans thinking about on Memorial Day, but also on every day. I'd like to welcome our guests this hour. Jack Foy was a machine gunner in the Army 87th Infantry Division in World War II. Jack, thank you for your service, and welcome to the program.
Thank you, Evan. Welcome to you.
And welcome to Corporal John Woods from the Army Air Corps in World War II. Once again, thank you for your service, Corporal, and welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Let me ask both of you a general question, and then we'll kind of move more specifically. But, you know, some veterans choose not to discuss too much of what they experienced in war. I think I've mentioned that on this program before that my father served in the Vietnam War. I cannot remember more than one or two conversations he's ever wanted to have about it. Others find it important or cathartic to talk about it. Let me ask both of you, Jack, I'll start with you. Why do you choose to share your stories? Is it important to you that you do that? How do you feel about that?
Well, it's important that people know about World War II, what actually happened. I think most of us, after the war, we came home, we had going some kind of a business, maybe go back to school, raise our families, and so forth. And we were real busy for many years. But in 1991, when it was the 50th anniversary of Pearl Harbor, and then that was what they're showing all over television, Pearl Harbor and various other battles, that was when I think that most of us kind of woke up and decided it's time to tell our stories. I know that's the way it affected me, and that's when I started telling my family. I had four children, telling them, and I wrote a little story about it. And I gave a lot of talks to schools and other organizations over the years, too.
Jack, we will ask you about some of those specific memories this hour, because I think they are important, and I tend to agree with that. But how is it for you when you think back to those memories and when you tell those stories? Is it emotionally difficult for you?
It gets very difficult sometimes. I've even broken down crying in the middle of a talk. It has happened that way. It all comes back to you all of a sudden when you're talking about it. It can get very emotional.
Well, let me ask Corporal John Woods the same kind of question. I know it can be difficult to talk about experiences. What has been your feeling, Corporal Woods, over the years about talking about these experiences in the service?
Well, we've seldom talked about it, I joined the Army Air Corps when I was 17 years old, and I went to air combat crew trainings and was sent to Goodfellow Air Force Base in Texas and learned combat training for gunnery school. And it was a very tough program, but I got through most of it and became set to go to gunnery school as a combat gunnery unit, when all of a sudden the war in Europe ended, and they stopped the program. They told us that that we were getting the combat units from Europe were coming across and to go into Pacific, and they no longer needed us in that program. And we were, shocked by that because we thought it was kind of silly. There were certainly more combat crews were then needed to go to the Pacific than just. They brought forth a honorable discharge for us. And I refused the honorable discharge. I said, that's ridiculous. I said, there's a war in the Pacific, and I'm going there. And so they said, the only way you're going there is you're going to get some different training. So they sent me to a school to be a where I did sheet metal school, and I got through that. It was a quick one, and then I got trained to go to Pacific to Guam, and I was shipped on to San Francisco, and from San Francisco we flew to Hickam Air Force Base in Hawaii, and from there flew on to several small islands before we got to Guam. And Guam, that's where I got when I got there, they said, hey, we don't need any sheet metal men, but we're going to assign you to headquarters, sub-headquarters, and you're going to be a runner. And I said, what's a runner? And they said, well, you're going to have a Jeep, and you're going to transfer information for to different units in Guam. So that's when I first got my driver's license and how to drive a Jeep. And that was a great unit, and did that quite a bit, and I had some free time with a Jeep, and found a young boy in the village, and I kind of adopted him. I brought food to him and for him and his family. They lived in just a little hut in the jungle area, and I still have a picture of him. It's on the back of my honor flight, Rochester Honor Flight badge.
Well, and John, can I ask you just a little? I'm going to ask John a little bit about Honor Flight, and then I'd also like Jack to talk a little bit about why he decided to join the Army. Jack's story, of course, is pretty remarkable in that regard, too. John, I know Honor Flight has been important to you, maybe even offering a bonding experience with your daughter, as I understand it. Tell me about that.
Yes, I went to my Honor Flight on April 2013. I was one of the first flights out of Rochester, and I went with my daughter, Lori. She was every person on Honor Flight has to have an aide, and the aide is usually a relative, and this was Lori. Was mine, and each one had to have a wheelchair for us. Now, I didn't need a wheelchair, but she had to push it around anyway. And we wound up going to the honor flight took us to by Southwest Airlines. We had a meet at the airport at 4 o'clock in the morning, and they had breakfast for us there and gave us our tickets to board a Southwest Airlines plane, and then we flew directly to the Southwest port just outside of Washington, where we boarded a bus with a that took us up to the World War II Museum, and at that time I saw first time I saw the World War II Museum, and there at that place I bumped into excuse me, I'm kind of losing my breath here a little bit, but the governor, Senator Dole, was there, and when I went up to meet Senator Dole, he had a long conversation with me, because he was wounded in the Battle of Italy severely, yeah. And but he talked about this is the only war museum exhibit in that was not paid for by the government. It was entirely paid for by volunteers, by people volunteering money for this monument. The only war monument in Washington that was paid for by volunteers. Mm-hmm. And I saw the different places where I was with Saipan and Guam and Tinian, and had I had my picture taken there, and then I went over to where the stars are by the waterfall, and that was for the memory of all the veterans of World War II who died in that terrible war. And I stood at attention for about 5 minutes with a salute to my hat, honoring all those who had died in World War II.
Well, that's just a remarkable moment, and Corporal, we appreciate you sharing that story. Corporal John Woods served in the Army Air Corps in World War II. Jack Foy, a machine gunner in the Army 87th Infantry Division in World War II. And listeners, this is our continuing commitment to making sure their voices and the voices of those who served in World War II are heard for as long as we can possibly hear them, and we appreciate that. And Jack, we heard John talk about his decision to serve. Can you tell us for yourself here, you know, my understanding is that you joined the Army's specialized training program for high IQ soldiers, went to Cornell, right. Completed your first year in what, 4 months?
Right.
Remarkable. Why did you want to do that?
Well, the Army offered me what I thought was a pretty good deal. We're going to go for the college for 2 years and get a degree in engineering. But after about 4 or 5 months, we finished the first year, and the Army decided that he needed infantrymen more than engineers. Mm. So they pulled us all out. There's some 200,000, I guess, that were in that program. And they pulled us all out and shoved us into the infantry. And it was actually a crime. These guys, IQs of 125, 130. We had guys that up just shy of 150 in the IQ test. They fell like flies alongside of me over there. And so many of the, well, in my own company, we had 200 men in my company. And About 80 of them got killed, and almost all the rest were wounded. I was one of maybe about 10, 12 guys that weren't badly wounded. I got wounded 3 times, but I was lucky, just minor stuff that didn't amount to too much.
And I know you've told this story before, but I think for our listeners, it will probably be the first time they've heard the story of you losing your friend Harvey, which I think is the kind of illustration of what the reality of war was like. Would you mind telling that story?
All right. Let me take you back 75 years to a foxhole just outside of Bastogne, Belgium. We're just getting ready to jump off an attack in a strong German position. The temperature is about 10 below zero, a couple feet of snow on the ground. And German artillery is blasting our position. The ground is heaving up and down with the violence of the explosion. The trees are splintering and crashing to the ground. The shrapnel is slicing into soldiers' flesh. The rifle and machine gun fire splits the air. The sound is deafening and overwhelming. We are the machine gun section of what is left of an infantry company of the 87th Infantry Division, part of General George Patton's famous Third Army. Young men, hardly more than boys, most of us 18, 19, 20 years old, frontline infantrymen. Alongside of me is a good friend that I had trained with for over a year, Harvey Wilson. Harvey was very quiet because Harvey is dead. He was feeding ammunition to my machine gun when a German bullet took him. Within about 10 yards of our position are the bodies of 3 more of my comrades, men that I can never forget, Finn, West, and Porzio, half buried in the snow and frozen in the 10 below zero weather, an image that still sears my mind after over 75 years. There would be many more before this war was over. My machine gun squad of 6 men was now down to 2. Then the word came down, move out. And we began our attack on the German position. And this was a scene that was lived by most of the men of the Battle of the Bulge.
Jack,
it was no fun.
Boy, Jack. And you know, I've heard you tell the story about Harvey and the moment when you realized it, because he's supposed to be feeding the machine gun,
right.
and you wanted him to move faster, wondering why you're so
right.
slow over there.
Yeah.
Didn't realize that his life had already been taken.
Right.
Just gut-wrenching. And now, as you look back, Jack, do you feel that there is a proper appreciation for just how devastating war can be? I mean, have your feelings at all changed over time about this? How do you feel?
No, I think most of the people have kind of gotten the message, except for the past few years. Now, I talked to dozens and dozens of schools, mostly high schools and a few colleges. And the teachers that I used to deal with, they're years ago, they're either dead or retired or whatever. And the new younger teachers, the recent graduates of our universities, have been taught almost to hate our country, I think. That's the attitude that I get from them. Most of them, I think, agree with our governor. A few months ago, the governor was just talking a little while ago, about a year or so ago, I guess it was, he came out with a foolish statement. What has America ever done that's great? And if I had something in my hand, I would have thrown it at him. But I think we've done a lot of things that were great. And most of the stories that we've told are true stories. As I say, I've talked to groups all over the country, and most of the people have gotten the message. But except for those new college boys, my talks at schools, as I say, I used to have before around Memorial Day time. I'd have maybe a dozen talks, and then again around Veterans Day, I would have maybe about 30 talks. But now with the new teachers, they don't want to be bothered with that, stay with that nonsense. I have 2 or 3 talks. I had them booked for around Memorial Day, but of course everything was called off on account of the virus thing. And I expect that most of them around Veterans Day will also be called off. I don't know.
Well, Jack, I just got an email from a listener who says these men did no less than save civilization.
Yeah.
How about that? John, do you feel that way, Corporal Woods?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It was, and Jack had a wonderful combat experience, and I congratulate him for it.
Yeah. Well, Corporal Woods and Jack Foy joining us here, both having served in World War II and making sure that we don't forget their stories. And so let's take our only break of the hour. It's a short one, and we're right back with not only their recollections, but the lessons they hope that generations can carry forward. We'll also talk to them about the fact that, you know, they saw some things that they hope people will never have to see again in a war and live through so much of what I think people thought is unthinkable. Well, I wonder if they ever thought we'd live through a pandemic. How are they doing in their 90s in the pandemic here? We're going to talk to them about that and much more next. Coming up in our second hour, a conversation with the candidates on the Democratic side for the 136th District Assembly seat. There's an election less than a month away. And in this particular race, it's a seat that was held by Jamie Romeo at the State Assembly, and previously to that, Joe Morelli. Romeo was appointed to be the county clerk when Adam Bella won the county executive seat, and now you'll meet the Democrats running for that nomination next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. John Woods, you lived through things that many people will never experience, and I suspect you hope that no one will have to experience again, and yet none of us really had a playbook for living through a pandemic. How has life been like for you in the last couple of months? How are you doing?
Well, we're doing fine. Housebound, of course, and but we have a nice deck out in the back, and we can get some sunshine.
Absolutely.
So it hasn't been too bad.
Do you feel, John, do you feel that largely this is an important moment for people to sort of come together and you know, sort of make sure that we're protecting the most vulnerable? I mean, or do you have any different views? How do you feel about that?
Well, I think we have to abide by the rules that are given us, and we certainly don't want to get the pandemic ourselves. So that's one area. I had a really interesting experience, though, talking about the honor flight. We got letters from children in elementary school directly to us when we were on the flight. And afterwards, I went back to one of the elementary schools here in Greece and talked to the children who sent the letter to us on while we were on the flight. I had a group picture with all of them. Teachers were very nice in having me there. And they asked me, what was the most best experience in the war? And I kind of looked at the kids, and I said, you know, the best experience was when the sergeant came in to the barracks and said, mail call. Mail call was when we got letters from home. And, you know, they read off the names of who got a letter, and you saw the soldier who got a letter. He took it, and he went off in a safe place, and he read it over and over again. And then saw the soldier who didn't get a letter, and he kind of walked out off by himself, hoping he'd get a letter in the next mail call. And I said to the kids, I said, you know, you're right now in writing letters, like the letter you wrote to me. You know, if you would write a letter to your mother and tell her how much you love her, she'll keep that letter for the rest of her life. With all the emails and so forth that go on, they disappear. but your mother will keep that letter for the rest of her life. After I said that to the teacher, said, would you mind talking to the other classes I've got here in this elementary school and tell them the same story? I said, well, you're pleased to do it. And I did, and it was a great experience.
Jack, how are you hanging in these days? What have the last couple of months been like
pretty
for you?
Good.
Yeah?
I have a story of our own mortality, though. Hmm. About 25 years ago, I helped to start the local Veterans of the Battle of the Bulge group. We had a little over 100 men in it. Well, I finally had to close it down a year ago on Veterans Day. I have 3 men left out of the 200, out of over 100. They're all gone. Hmm. I'd like to tell you about, the ultimate experience that I had this past November. My phone rang here. I received a call from a woman who said that she was the secretary to the President of the United States. She said her name was Marcy Mount. She says, I'm the secretary to the President of the United States in the White House. And I said, yes, and what else are you selling? She said, no. She says, I really am. She says, if you have any doubts, hang up the phone and call back on the White House number. And they'll call it, and they'll connect you right back up with me. So anyway, she proved that she said that the president has selected me to represent the veterans of the Battle of the Bulge, end of World War II, at his talk in New York City on Veterans Day. So a couple of days later, we got the air flight reservations and hotel reservations. My son Kevin and I went down to New York, and the next morning to Madison Square Park, where the president was to speak. The security was very tight. We called a certain telephone number, and 2 Secret Service men came out and brought us through the security. We sat down right in the front row, right in the middle of the Trump family. Eric Trump and Lara Trump were sitting right next to me, and the rest of the family was kind of scattered around the area. And Laura, she pat my arm, and she said, now, don't be nervous. President Trump arrived and took his place on the stage with bulletproof glass all around it. It was only about 10 feet away from us. And he talked for about 10 minutes, and then he got to the important part, my story. He said that in a month we'd be celebrating the 75th anniversary of the Battle of the Bulge, and we are honored to have a veteran of that battle with us today, 94-year-old Corporal Jack Foy. I stood up and saluted him, and he pointed his finger at me and he says, you're looking good, Jack, you're looking good. For about 4 or 5 minutes, he talked about my service as a machine gunner in northern France, the Battle of the Bulge and Bastogne across Europe, about the liberation of concentration camps and prisoner of war camps, the fighting, the killing we had to do. To have the President of the United States, the most powerful man in the world, talk about me for 4 or 5 minutes was just unbelievable. The talk was carried all over the world on TV, except here in Rochester. The 3 networks cut it off after about 8 minutes. The Fox network carried the whole thing. I don't know if your station did or not. But the ultimate experience of my life to have the President of the United States talk about me like that. Then he sent me, a few weeks after that, he sent me a personal letter, too. So I'm still on cloud 9.
Well, let me ask you, Jack, and then I'll ask John the same thing. You both were willing to sacrifice your lives in a moment in which, as our listeners have said earlier this hour, that the world was on a hinge point toward tyranny. You were willing to sacrifice your lives. You both, of course, survived that war, but you lost many friends.
Yeah.
But your entire generation, many of your generation, was willing to sacrifice that way. Jack, I'll start with you. Do you think, Corporal Foy, that Americans are willing to sacrifice in the same way today that your generation was?
Not in the same numbers, I don't believe. People are a little too independent today. They don't see any reason why they owe the government or the country, the United States, anything. And they aren't taught patriotism in the schools and that like they were years ago. I don't think the kids coming through school today, except the young men who decide, well, I want to go in the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, whatever. And thousands of them do. But I just don't see the patriotism on the young people. You see it on television all the time where they're asking the kids. They don't have the slightest idea of history. They ask them, who won the Civil War? I think England did. You know, nothing of history. They aren't taught history anymore. They don't. What do they call it? Social studies, I guess they call it. They don't even call it history anymore. And I talk in a lot of high schools and colleges, and I am really amazed at the ignorance of history that our kids have.
That's rough. Corporal Woods, do you think this the current generation would be willing to sacrifice the way your generation was?
I think they would. When Americans gets a situation like we were in, people volunteer. And I was 17 years old and I volunteered. I was gung-ho to get in there. And I think the same thing will happen if we have an experience such as World War II, but I hope we never do. And I do think that there the schools are being taught about World War II and the history of America. And that, along with all the books that are put out about World War II that people read and buy, about people like Jack and other people that served in World War II, this country is a good country, and the people in it are good, and they will come forth if situations should arrive.
In our last few minutes here, and let me ask just a little bit of what our guests hope that our following generations, the generations that have followed theirs, will continue to keep in mind, because we know that every day, for a long time, we've been losing Americans who served in World War II. Corporal Jack Foy, what do you hope Americans keep in mind about World War II and the service of your generation?
Just that they remember what we did. I think it's beyond a doubt that the service guys who served in World War II, we saved Western civilization. If it wasn't for the men of the American Army, we'd probably be speaking Russian or Chinese now, Japanese, something like that. It was a horrible time in our history, but it was a time that showed what American can do, what Americans can do when we really have to do it. We don't like to fight, but if we have to get into it, we're going to get into it and do it. Do it right.
And Jack, as the emailer said earlier this hour, he said that the men of that generation saved Western civilization, saved the world against tyranny. And the emailer said, if that sounds like hyperbole, it is not. That is really how close we came. Do you still feel that way, Jack?
Oh, yes, very, very definitely, very definitely. Hmm.
Corporal Woods, what do you hope future generations are taking from the stories like yours?
Well, I think they're going to realize that when the situation came about, there was a generation of people, young people, who volunteered and knew what they were going into, but didn't really know what they were going into until they got there. And they went through it and came back home and made a successful life for themselves and for their family and for their kids. And I guess you can't ask for any more than that.
I think that's well said. And briefly, Corporal Woods, is there a day that goes by that you don't think of your service in the war?
Yeah, you know, you're probably right there. I do think of it every once in a while. You know, I have memorabilia, pictures, and all my orders in the file, and occasionally I take a look at them. And I also have a younger brother who had spent 20 years in the Air Force after World War II. He was in the Cold War.
Well, remarkable family, and thank you. And Jack, I'm down to my last 30 seconds. Is there a day that goes by, Corporal Foy, that you don't think about your service? No?
No, I don't think so. I still see the destroyed tanks burned black standing in the snow. And the most horrifying scene is the snow-covered mounds, once men, our comrades, dotting the landscape, many with frozen arms and legs raised aloft through the snow, seemingly begging us not to forget them. Mm. That's with me all the time.
Corporals Foy and Woods, I want to say again to you, thank you for your service, and thank you for continuing to share your stories with us and with those you meet in your life. Corporal Jack Foy, machine gunner in the Army 87th Infantry Division of World War II, thank you so much, Jack.
Thank you.
Corporal John Woods from the Army Air Corps of World War II, John, thank you, and again, thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Remarkable stories. Remarkable men. Let's take a short break, and we got more connections coming up.